Is everybody connected? Who's large and in charge?
God. Surrender the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference.
Thank you.
Hi, everybody. My name's Mickey Bush, and I'm a fully conceited alcoholic. I am very glad to be here. I'm having a gratitude attack right now. Anybody know what I mean by gratitude attack? Know what I mean? This is great. There's always one. Okay. I want to thank my good friend Ralph for driving me here. We just drove across Germany and stopped several times and visited, and Ralph will be talking with you a little while. I want to thank you guys for coming here. I just love it. I just absolutely love being a small part of this great whole. I love that. I love being a small part of a great whole. I love that. I know some of you have said even here today that I save your life. Well, we know who saves the lives around here, but if you want to give me the credit, I'll take it. I just had a couple of well-known actresses in Los Angeles tell me that I was a celebrity in Alcoholics Anonymous. I was a celebrity speaker. I was a guru. I went, what are you talking about? Now, these are Academy Award-winning actresses that you all know by name, members of my old home group I was visiting. I said, what are you talking about? He said, like, you're like this celebrity guy that talks everywhere and everybody knows you, and you're like this guru type guy. And she said, I was just making a movie in New York, she said, and I went to two meetings in New York, and in both the meetings they mentioned you and they quoted you and mentioned you by name, and you're like this celebrity. I said, yeah, bloody big deal. A celebrity in an anonymous program. I said, no, you're a celebrity. I'm just a clean and sober member. You're a small part of a great whole. And I love that. I love that. And that's what we are. We're a small part of a great whole, and I love that. So thank you for being here, and thank you for allowing me to come here. I'm gonna do some things today. I'm going to talk about the first three steps and what I call the step before the steps. We have a whole thing about the steps before the steps, which is why I identified as a fully conceited alcoholic. Because in the beautiful book, Alcoholics Anonymous, this beautiful book that I love so much, on page 30, it says, we learned we had to fully concede to my innermost self that I was alcoholic. This is the first step in recovery. So that meant there was two first steps in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. The first step in recovery and the first of the 12 steps. And they're totally different steps, though they're often confused. And a lot of people, well-meaning people I'm sure, they say that an alcoholic has done the first of the 12 steps by admitting they're alcoholic. And of course in the first of the 12 steps there's no mention of admitting they're alcoholic. It's admitting we're powerless over alcohol, that our lives have become unmanageable. A totally different step to the learning about the first step in recovery, which is we learned we had to fully concede to our innermost self that we were alcoholic. This is the first step in recovery. And that's on page 30, because a little bit earlier on page 20, it says, if you are an alcoholic who wants to get over it, you may already be asking, what do I have to do? So I've got to come from the space of being an alcoholic to want to get over it, to ask, what do I have to do? And if a newcomer or somebody who's confused asks a guy like me, what do I have to do? I will tell him, you'll have to do the 12 spiritual steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, starting with step 1. So I've got to come from the space of being an alcoholic to then become willing to do the program starting with step one. So step one is not about admitting I'm an alcoholic. People are often confused about that. And consequently, they think they've done the first of the 12 steps by admitting they're alcoholic. Even well-meaning old-timers say, I was at a meeting not too long ago where a guy with 23 years said that a newcomer does the first of the 12 steps as soon as he walks through the door and raises his hand as an alcoholic. He's done the first step. I said, where are you getting this shit from? He said, I'm 23 years sober, that's my experience, strength and hope. I said, shove it up your tush. You know what I mean? I said, you're a spy in the camp, you are. You're a spy. The disease has let you walk around here staying sober so that you can do its job for it. Spreading that crap amongst us. You know? People say all kinds of weird shit in Alcoholics Anonymous. I call it lip-flapping party line bullshit, is what I call it. But, I mean, they say it, and they believe it, and they repeat it, and it gets picked up. It gets picked up as if it's the program, and it ain't the program. You know, look, it says, we learned we had to fully concede to our innermost self that we were alcoholic. This is the first step in recovery. And nobody talks about that. Why? Because they're all too busy talking about admittance, acceptance and surrender. Admittance, acceptance and surrender ain't even in the program. Ain't even mentioned in the program. Admitted in step one, but admittance, acceptance and surrender ain't even mentioned. But people are talking about it as if it's the deal. And it ain't the deal. The deal is fully concede to your innermost self that you are. And people ain't talking about that. So consequently, they get confused and they don't get it right. So down the road a piece, the foundation isn't rock solid, so it comes crashing down. The sobriety comes crashing down. What happens to anything that isn't built on a solid foundation? Can you hear me? Am I there? What happens to anything that isn't built on a solid foundation? Comes crashing down. Well, the first three steps are going to be the foundation that we're going to build our sobriety on, starting with the first of the 12 steps and starting with what I call the step before the steps. And I started doing this, folks, because I read about Bill Wilson, and in his later days he stopped doing 12-step calls as we understood 12-step calls because he started being concerned more with the folks who got here but didn't stay, that got drunk and got loaded again, and he started concentrating more on those. And I started doing that as well. And when I started doing that, I started asking a few questions, and people didn't know simple basic stuff as they thought, believed and said they did. And that's very dangerous. You know, it's one thing if you don't know it. But if you don't know it but think you do, that's very dangerous. See? So I started doing some of this work, and some of this is what I'm going to talk about today. I love cold water. I keep wanting to bless it and turn it into wine, but you know. There was a dude who did that, you know. Must have been alcoholic. Must have been. All those folks. I mean, that dude had Mary Magdalene. She was like one of those like lovely ladies. Adam and Eve. Adam and Eve were alcoholic. Did you know that? Adam and Eve were alcoholic. They must have been alcoholic, Adam and Eve, because only alcoholics screw up paradise. Yes, don't they? You know, so... Anyway... So I like to do some of this stuff, and we learned we had to fully concede to our innermost self that I'm alcoholic. This is the first step in recovery. When I got to Alcoholics Anonymous on January the 15th, 1983, I never came in here with the only requirement for membership. I didn't come in here with the desire to quit. I never knew nothing about it. I was so sick when I got here that I didn't know I was sick. And that's really sick. When you're so sick you don't know you're sick, that's really sick. And when you're as sick as me and you come in a room like this and you think, well, I ain't as sick as him. Now, he's sick. That's really sick. And when you're so sick that you don't think you're as sick as someone else, that's really sick. So if you're in here today wondering whether you is or whether you isn't a real alcoholic or not, I want you to know that I can relate to being as sick as you don't think you are. Really sick. But I do today, I know today, sick, S-I-C-K, spiritually ill can kill. And that's what I was. I was spiritually defunct in every department, separated from God, bankrupt from God, defeated by the disease of alcoholism. You see, and now I later found out that that's what the spiritual awakening was. The spiritual awakening was defeating the disease of alcoholism. So, that's a talk for another time. But I didn't know that I was alcoholic, and I didn't know what being an alcoholic was, and I didn't know about Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't know about, 12 steps. And I'll talk about that when I talk later tonight or whenever it is. Cigarettes. You tried cigarettes? Anyway. So, on January the 15th, 1983, I get to Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't know nothing about nothing. I later discover that I've hit bottom on January the 15th, and that was what was different about January 15th than any other time that I'd come out of being a blackout. I'm a blackout drinker. I didn't even know what a blackout was. Do you guys know what a blackout is?
No.
How many blackout drinkers here? And the rest of you lying mothers, I know. Blackout drinkers when I see them, anyway, I don't know nothing about nothing. I don't know nothing about alcoholism. I don't know nothing about being alcoholic, and everything I've learned is all in retrospect. Everything I've learned is all since I got here on January the 15th, 1983. So if you're new or returning and what we're talking about is strange or you don't understand, stick around and keep coming back. Don't become a keep coming backer. I mean, be a sticker and a stayer. Be a sticker and a stayer. I tell folks to become a sticker and a stayer, not a keep coming backer. Mind you, if you relapse or go back out, we do want you to come back, of course. But become a sticker and a stayer, not a keep coming backer. Because when you become a keep coming backer, you fall into a trap. And it's a disease the trap sets you into. Sober, screwed up, comeback. Sober, screwed up, comeback. And it's a disease of repetition. And then when you get back, you not only got to learn what to do to stay clean and sober, but you've got to learn what to do to break the grips of the pattern that the disease has got you in. It's very difficult, see? So if you're here today, become a sticker and a stayer. Is there people here like me that relapsed and went back out? Yeah, good. Well, I'm glad you're all here. I'm really glad. Is there any social drinkers here today? It's a disease of denial, No social drinkers? No? No social drinkers? I tell you why I think I'm a social drinker. I think I'm a social drinker because every time somebody said, I'm going for a drink, I said, social eye. How many social drinkers here now? Oh, denial. D-E-N-I-A-L. Don't even notice I am lying. See, I don't notice when I'm lying and I don't notice when I'm being lied to. D-E-N-I-A-L. Don't even notice I am lying or don't even notice it's a lie. I don't notice when people are telling me lies and when the disease is lying to me. This is the only disease, by the way, that tells you you haven't got it. That's weird, isn't it? This is the only disease that tells you you ain't even got a disease. And yet it's the only disease that if you recover from it, like our book says, anybody read this book, by the way? Who reads the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous? Good. Few hands there, not up. But, you know, this disease is not only the only disease that tells you you ain't got it, but it's the only disease that when you recover from it, you become better than you were before you had it. That's good shit, isn't it? You know, no other disease is like that. This is the only disease, and this disease tells you you ain't got it. Anybody remember the voices that talk to you? Who remembers voices that talk to you? You know them voices that talk to you? You know them voices that just said, what voices? Them voices. Remember them voices? What, you know, them voices. Aha, you're a piece of shit, you are. Aha. Your girlfriend's cheating on you, your best friend's getting some. Ha ha. You're going to get fired today. Ha ha. You might as well drink. You deserve a drink. You've worked hard. It's a hot day. You can have a cold one. You're not really an alcoholic. He's an alcoholic. You're not as bad as him. You could have a drink. And then that drink becomes like close and you take a... And then right after you take the first drink, that same voice that just told you it was okay to do it now says, what a dick! Drinking again! Got you again! Well, you're a newcomer again now! What a dick! Drinking again! Yeah. It never says, stop, I was just kidding. Does it? Gotcha again. Oh well, you might as well get shit-faced. So we have to be careful of these kind of things. But when I'm fully conceded to my innermost self that I'm alcoholic, we become different to admittance, acceptance and surrender. Admittance, acceptance and surrender sounds like the deal, but it ain't the deal. See, on page one of the beautiful book Alcoholics Anonymous, Bill's story, Bill talks about us new young officers from Plattsburgh were assigned. You know, we visited Winchester Cathedral. We returned at last, 22 and a veteran of foreign wars. He's talking about the First World War, you know, when Kaiser Wilhelm was rampaging through Europe and going to take over the world, you know. And, you know, that German army, they did a very silly thing. They upset them bad boys from the US of A, and them bad boys from the US of A came over to Europe, you know, over here, Yankee Doodle Dandy and all that stuff, and they kicked the Kaiser's ass, man, and saved our bacon, you know, and we're glad they did that, you know, and that German army were defeated, and they admitted that defeat, and they accepted that defeat, and they surrendered. So that German army were defeated, they admitted that defeat, they accepted that defeat, and they surrendered. Well, I was born in the Second World War, 1943. You know, the Luftwaffe were bombing the crap out of London and other places. You know, Hitler was going to take over the world, have 1,000 years of Third Reich, you know, and did a very silly thing. They upset them bad boys from the US of A. And then bad boys came over and kicked his ass again. But that wasn't the first time they did that, see? They did that in the First World War. In the First World War they did that, and they were defeated, they admitted that defeat, they accepted that defeat, and they surrendered. But you see, they didn't fully concede. So they came back and did it again. And in 1938, when little shitpot Hitler says, let's go storming into Poland, Czechoslovakia and other places, nobody said, don't do that, don't do that, don't do that. Those bad boys from the US of A have come over and kick our ass like they did before. Don't do that, don't do that. See, they hadn't fully conceded. They were defeated, they admitted that defeat, they accepted that defeat and they surrendered, but they didn't fully concede. So they came back and did it again. Is sounding familiar? See? And they didn't fully concede, you see. So they come back and they did it again. When we fully concede to our innermost self, it's a done deal. You can admit, accept and surrender all you like, but it ain't a done deal. I hear people talking about, I'm not going to drink again. I remember what happened last time. Anybody remember this?
Yeah.
I'm not going to drink again. I know what would happen if I did. Well, when you fully concede, you haven't got to rely on two things, memory or knowledge. Because what I know changes. What I know today was different from yesterday, and what I know tomorrow will be different to today. So if I'm relying on what I know and it changes, I'm screwed. And I can't afford that where drinking's concerned. And if I'm relying on my memory, oh, well, I mean, I'll forget anything, me. I mean, ISM, incredibly short memory, you know. I mean, I'll remember the $2 some dick owes me from 20 years ago, but I'll forget what I got to do today and what I got to do and if and what will happen to me. If I remember, my memory fades. So if I'm like relying on memory or knowledge and it changes or it fades, I'm screwed. And I don't want to be screwed. See? But when I fully concede to my innermost self, it's a done deal. It's all the way to the stone, man. It's like my friends in Pink Floyd wrote, all the way to the stone, to the gravestone. And those voices that talk to me can't get through. There's no let's make a deal. There's no can we talk about it? Can we discuss it? You know, are you sure? It's a done deal. I'm alcoholic. See? And I haven't got to rely on memory or knowledge. And I can rely on that. And I can know that those voices and those obstacles are not going to get through to me. And I'm going to learn to fully concede to my innermost self. What is my innermost self? Well, people say, well, the longest journey is from the head to the heart. Screw that shit, you know. I don't even know where that comes from. I can't rely on my mind. The disease, the twofold disease, obsession of the mind, allergy of the body. I can't rely on my mind. My mind, the disease lays mainly in my mind, and what I do with my mind is think. So I can't rely on that, because shit, S-H-I-T, simply how I think. You know, I can't rely on that. Can't rely on my mind. Can't rely on my mouth, my truth, because I speak with a forked tongue and I'll tell a lie any chance I get to take advantage of you. So I can't rely on my mind or my mouth. I can't rely on my heart. My heart. My feelings. My heart's been broken many times and will be again, so I can't rely on that. So I can't rely on my mind, my mouth, or my heart. So where is my innermost self? My friend Earl, who many of you know, talks about, you know, the core of my being. I talk about my gut-level honesty, that place 2 inches behind your belly button, which is yours, where you know, where you put your head on the pillow, there's just you and your truth. And you can fully concede to your innermost self that no one can get to and no disease can go past. I'm an alcoholic. See? Learn to fully concede to my innermost self that I'm alcoholic. Well, what is it about me that makes me alcoholic? I didn't know. I didn't know what it was about me that made me alcoholic. I didn't know I was an alcoholic. I'm one of the people that got to Alcoholics Anonymous, and like Bill and Bob when they were doing the third man on the bed, you know, they tell him, you are an alcoholic. And he says, well, I didn't think much of that. I figured I was just a drunk. He said, no, you're an alcoholic. We have something wrong with us. There's something different about us. Alcoholic. And that's what happened to me when I got here on January the 15th, 1983. I never knew I was alcoholic. How would I know? I didn't know. Where I come from in northwest London, everybody drinks. I don't know why we drink. We just drink. Everybody drinks. We drink if the team wins. We drink if the team loses. If it's a tie, we drink till there's a result. We just drink. Nobody ever said we should. Nobody ever said we shouldn't. We just drink. Everybody drinks. I drink like them. They drink like me. We just drink together. I don't know why we drink. You guys know why you drink. I hear you guys talking about why you drink. You say you drink because you couldn't stand the pain, and you drink because you were hiding behind who you was, and you drink because you have all these issues. Like, pass the tissues, I got issues, you know. At what stage of the game do you discover that? I don't remember that. I can't imagine going into any pub I ever drank at and saying, oh, bartender, hit me with a triple shot of your best booze. Because I can't stand who I am and I want to cover up the pain tonight. Never happened. Never happened. Oh, Mr. Dealer Man, give me an extra rock of crack cocaine, because I really feel inadequate. Never happened. Never happened. I have no idea why I do what I do. I just do it. I've always done it. I don't know why I do it. I just always done it. And that's all I know. I got three sisters and a brother. They're not alcoholic. My three sisters and brother ain't alcoholic. People think they're born alcoholic. Load of crap. You can't be born an alcoholic. However, that's another story. My three sisters and brother, same blood, same family, same environment, same everything. I'm alcoholic, they're not alcoholic. Three sisters and a brother not alcoholic, I'm alcoholic. Well, guess what? They got two kids apiece. Well, I got two kids. I ain't never been married, I ain't never had a wife. Of my own. But I got two kids. Guess what? I'm alcoholic, my kids ain't alcoholic. My three sisters and brother ain't alcoholic, their kids are alcoholic. That's weird shit, isn't it? See? That's what we're dealing with, though, here. You know, my three sisters and brother don't know why I drink. I don't know why they don't. I ask them, why don't you drink? They say, I don't like it. I say, what? What don't you like? They say, I don't like the way it makes me feel. I say, don't you? Don't. How's it make you feel? They say, well, if I have one too many, I feel sick. I say, sick? You've got to drink past that. Who stops at sick? I don't stop at sick. I do puke, but I don't stop drinking. I mean, oh, that's good. Made room for some more. They don't laugh. They think I'm weird. They think I'm weird. You know, they don't laugh. They don't think it's funny. You know, they think I'm weird. They're not alcoholics. See, they don't understand what it is about us that makes me alcoholic. What is it that makes me alcoholic? I didn't know. I ask people, what is it about me that makes me alcoholic? Because a guy told me when I got to the very first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, January the 15th, 1983, got up in my face and said, you're an alcoholic. I said, what? He said, you're alcoholic. I said, that's a bloody mean thing to say to somebody. Say a thing like that to a dude. What do you mean? That's mean. He said, you're an alcoholic. I said, why'd you say that? He said, because if it looks like a duck and walks like a duck and sounds like a duck and smells like a duck, it's a bloody duck. Just because he's been taking some shit and thinks he's an eagle, no, you're a duck. You're a duck, I'm a duck. Quack, quack, he said. Wow, what is all this? This is the bloody funny farm, man, you know. Guys loving on you and shit and ducks and eagles and... what is that? But later on I found out that it was like it was like introducing me to the idea of what it was about me that made me alcoholic. Because I didn't know. I didn't know what it was about me that made me alcoholic. And I asked people, what was it about me that made me alcoholic? And the duck and the eagle story later became part of that. Because I asked people what it was about me that made me alcoholic and they didn't know. I don't know whether you know or not, but most people don't. Everybody can say they is an alcoholic, but I ask them, what is it about you that makes you alcoholic? And they don't know. So you know what they do? They tell me what they do because they're alcoholic. I ask them, what is it about you that makes you alcoholic? And they tell me the consequences and the results of being alcoholic. And that's not what makes me alcoholic. What makes me alcoholic isn't what I do because I'm alcoholic. Because I'm alcoholic, one's too many and 1,000 ain't enough. Because I'm alcoholic, once I start, I can't stop. Because I'm alcoholic, I can't stop from starting. Because I'm alcoholic, I can't stop from starting, and once I've started, I can't stop. Anybody remember this? Yeah. That's not what makes me alcoholic. That's what I do because I'm alcoholic. Because I'm alcoholic, I've got a twofold disease. Obsession of the mind, allergy of the body. Obsession of the mind. A thought to the exclusion of all else, including recovery. When I get sucked in by the obsession, it takes away my ability to say no, so that then I have to say yes, so that when I do say yes, I think I chose to or wanted to, but didn't. Once I get sucked in by the obsession and take the first drink, it kicks in what we call a phenomenon of craving. A craving is a feeling beyond my mental control. So I can't stop from doing it, and once I'm doing it, I can't stop doing it. You think I knew this when I got here? I had no idea. So I can't not do it just because I don't want to, because I can't. A disease called alcoholism, a twofold disease called alcoholism, that makes me do it even though I don't want to do it. I've got a disease that makes me do what I already don't want to do. So I can't not do it just because I don't want to. I've got to not want to, but I can't rely on not wanting to. I've got to not want to do it, and then do these steps in this work so that I don't do what I already don't want to do. And if I ain't doing these steps in this work, or ain't done these steps in this work, I will do what I don't want to do, because the disease I got that I'm powerless over will make me do what I don't want to do. You think I knew this shit? How could I work that out for myself? I couldn't work that out. I needed you. I'm alcoholic. I didn't know I was alcoholic. How would I know that? I didn't know. I didn't know what it was about me that made me alcoholic. And I asked, and other people didn't know. They knew what they did because they were alcoholic. They could tell you that they was alcoholic. They could, like, tell you the consequences and the results of being alcoholic. But they didn't know what it was. They thought, believed, and said they did. Now, in one of my houses in Los Angeles, I got two parrots in a cage. A blue one and a green one. Bill and Bob is their name. And I've trained them to... God almighty, what's she doing? Shit, I saw legs and arses in the air. God. It made me forget my alcoholism then. My two parrots are called Bill and Bob, a blue one and a green one. And I've trained them to speak. And you can stand by the cage very quietly like that and just rock a little bit. And all of a sudden they go, I'm an alcoholic! Powerless! Alcoholic! Powerless! They're bloody parrots is what they are, but they could say they're alcoholic and powerless. And I didn't want to be a parrot walking around here talking jive ass shit that I didn't understand just because everybody else was saying it. So I wanted to know what was wrong with me and what to do about it. And so I started finding out and asking. And I didn't know what it was about me that made me alcoholic. But the duck and the eagle story started making sense. Because what it was about me that made me alcoholic wasn't what I did because I was alcoholic. Now, if you're alcoholic, got a twofold disease, obsession of the mind, allergy of the body. Yes, that's true. Because I'm alcoholic, once I start, I can't stop. Once I started, I can't stop, and I can't stop from starting. That's true. Because I'm alcoholic, one's too many and a thousand ain't enough. That's true. But you could read that in a library book. That's not what makes me alcoholic. That's what I do because I'm alcoholic. What makes me alcoholic is that little duck and the eagle story. See, what makes me alcoholic is what differentiates me from my three sisters and brother. I got a disease called alcoholism. That disease of alcoholism affects me differently than it affects them. It affects us differently, us alcoholics, than those folks out there. See, alcohol has a different effect on me than it does on those folk out there. We think it's the same for them out there, but it's not. We think that those folk out there have the same reaction to alcohol as we have, but they don't. See, they don't understand why we drink. We don't understand why they don't. Because alcohol don't do for them what it does for me. What alcohol does for me, and what makes me an alcoholic, is that I have an abnormal reaction to alcohol. And what that abnormal reaction to alcohol is that alcohol changes my perception of reality. That's what alcohol does for the alcoholic that it don't do for the normal person. alcoholics don't like reality. So we get alcohol to drink. When we drink alcohol, alcohol changes my perception of that reality. It don't change the reality, it just changes my perception of the reality. Alcohol changes me from a duck to an eagle. I go out drinking as a delicate little duck, have a few stiff ones, and turn into an eagle and go swooping around looking for prey. It don't do that for the normal person. You know? I call it a nerd remover. She's at it again, look. God damn. I call it a nerd remover. Alcohol removes the nerdness. You know what I mean by nerdness? You know what I mean by nerd? Yeah? Well, I mean you're foreigners, so I mean I'm only asking. Alcohol removes the nerdness. You know, I feel like a nerd, I drink, and I don't feel like a nerd. I feel like a nerd, and I drink, and I don't care if I'm a nerd. I feel like a nerd, and I drink, and you're a goddamn nerd. Alcohol changes me. It takes away the nerdness. Mary in my home group back there in Santa Monica, California, where I live in Los Angeles, you know, my home group, Mary's this delicate little dudette, a badass drunk is Mary, but she describes it as well as I've ever heard anybody describe it. Mary says when she drinks, she feels wittier, prettier and tittier. I know exactly what she means. Alcohol changes my perception of reality because I can't stand reality. I hate reality. You know? I don't like reality. Screw reality. And that never happened just because I got here, you know. When I was just a little kid. I mean, when I was just a little kid. Little tiny kid. Let's say, what's wrong with that kid? There's something wrong with that kid. He don't hear shit right. What's wrong with that kid? He don't hear shit right. And they thought I had a hearing problem. They'd say, lock him away. Put him away in a home somewhere. He's got a hearing problem. He don't hear shit right. Get you hung, that kid. What's wrong with that kid? And I wouldn't know. I'm just a little kid. And they said I had a hearing problem. So I thought I had a hearing problem. Because I don't hear shit right. I don't hear shit the same as other people. People say things and I don't like it, so I change it to what I do like and then blame you for telling me. And I'm just a little kid and I can't stand it. It's so painful and dysfunctional where I come from. And I don't know about you folks here in Denmark. I mean, we're in London and we were just poor and we didn't know we were poor, but we were poor and... I mean, I don't know whether you were poor or not, but, I mean, to tell you how poor we was, if I hadn't have been a boy, I'd have had nothing to play with. You know, but, oh, yeah, you were poor too, huh? Anyway, but I mean, just a little kid, and it's so dysfunctional, and remember this if you've got kids, because kids develop survival techniques. So, you know, we kids learn how to survive no matter how bad it is. And my survival technique was that people would tell me shit and I wouldn't like it, couldn't stand it, hated it. So, you know, I would mentally change it to what I did like. And you can imagine what a little kid likes. And then blame you for having told me. And they would think I'm weird. And they keep locking me up and putting me away. And I grew up living away and being locked up. And thinking I was mental. And they didn't know how to get through to me. They didn't know what was wrong with me. Not till I get to Alcoholics Anonymous do I discover what's wrong with me. I'm an alcoholic. They didn't do that when I was locked away in all those nut wards and all those criminal insane asylums and all the institutions that I've been locked away in. I've been locked away in places cuckoos wouldn't fly over. You know? But they never knew how to get through to me. They never knew what was wrong with me. And if they knew what was wrong with me, they never knew how to get through to me. Till I get to Alcoholics Anonymous, and one alcoholic relates to another alcoholic. That's what the magic is that we have in Alcoholics Anonymous rooms. That's the magic that we have in Alcoholics Anonymous that they don't have anywhere else. And you guys told me I was alcoholic. And even if they told me, they never knew how to get through to me. They may have told me. I'm not blaming anybody for not telling me, but I never heard it. Because I've got a hearing problem. I don't hear shit right. It used to drive my mum nuts. You know, I would come home drunk when I was living in my mum's house in northwest London. And I would come home drunk, shit-faced, you know. And alcoholics have this insane belief that they know how to be quiet. My mum would be in her bed. She'd hear everything. My mum heard everything that went on in that house. You could not get one over on my mum in her house. She knew every single thing that went on in that house. And she would hear me stumble bumming around. She'd yell out down the stairs, "Drunk again, son!" And I'd go, "So am I, mum." She'd say, "I'm not bloody drunk. I've been in bed since 8 o'clock. The hell's wrong with you? Goddamn weirdo." And I wouldn't get it. And I'd think, well, why did she say she was drunk then? She's messing with me. Because that's what I heard, see? Later on, when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I met one of those monsters that you meet in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know the monsters I'm talking about. Monster sponsor, you know. And he said, "Get a job." I said, "What?" He said, "Get a job." I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Go to work." I said, "What?" He said, "Get a job, go to work." I said, "I don't know how I'd get there." He said, "Get a bus." I said, "What?" He said, "Get a bus." And I went all embarrassed because I don't know how to get a bus. I've never done a bus. How do I do buses? I don't ride buses. I've never ridden a bus. But I feel silly, so I... Oh, all right. I'll rehearse getting a bus. So I went down to Sunset Boulevard. I'm living up above Sunset Boulevard in West Hollywood, and I saw buses going up and down the boulevard, full up with people. I thought, oh, I've got to be able to get a bus. Buses are full of people. So I stood at a bus stop, and a bus came along, and it opened up, and I hopped on the bus. Guy said, "Put some money in the trap." Put some money in the trap. Stood there and waited for something to happen, and the bus pulled away. And I went flying down the bus. I fell up against this chick with these big ones. She said, "Move your hands." Well, I don't hear shit right. I went, sure. Squeeze, squeeze. They threw me off the bus. You know, it's not my fault. I don't hear shit right. I mean, I just, you know. But when I drink, I don't give a shit, see? Because alcohol changed. And what I discovered was that as a little kid, I was changing my perception of reality. And later on, alcohol, and for me, drugs, did that. It changed my perception of reality that I couldn't stand. I can't stand reality. I hate reality. I can't stand reality. I hate everything about reality. And I don't know that I'm potentially an alcoholic. I mean, this disease of alcoholism is so powerful, and after the break I'm going to talk about step one and the powerlessness, but I mean, I hated the religion I was brought up in. I couldn't stand it. You know, my dad was Irish, and he was a member of the IRA and the CIA. Catholic Irish alcoholic, you know. He made us go to church and confession. And I'm not a Catholic basher. I don't want you to believe that. And in my beautiful book, it tells me Alcoholics Anonymous is maybe a better Catholic. But, you know, I hated it. I couldn't stand it. I hated all aspects of the religion. And this is really, really important for later on. You know, I was made to go to confession. And I'm a little kid. I'm 10, 11 years old. I don't know. And my dad whacked me one day and made me get a confession. And I was in the confessional. It's all dark. And there was someone there, the other side I had to talk to. I thought, oh, I don't like these people. I know what I'll do. I'll shit in the confessional. So I took a dump in the confessional. Big Irish community in the place I lived in. On Sundays, every hour they had a mass. And the mass in the church, huge big church, the whole town went to the mass. Every hour, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 o'clock. And the parish priest, he was like a god in the town. And he stood at the pulpit, and to do his sermon, and the whole congregation's listening. And he goes, "Ooh, shit in the confessional." His neck is bulging, I'm just this rotten little 10-year-old kid, And the next week I went prepared. I went in the other side. Took a shit then too, like that. Left a note, said, "The phantom shitter strikes again." The whole town! The whole town! Who's shitting the confessional? And I'm this little kid going, ha 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 ha. But I'm changing my perception of the reality because I can't stand reality. And on January the 15th, 1983, something happened. Something happened that hadn't happened before, and I'm going to talk about it after we have a break in about 10 minutes. What happened on January the 15th, 1983, I found out later, was that I hit bottom. But I didn't know what hitting bottom was, and I didn't know about it then. It's in retrospect that I talk about this. And I don't know what you brought to recovery, but what I brought here was a lot of hurt and hate. Hurt and hate. I'm 40 years of age and I'm full of hurt and hate. And guess what? Alcohol has stopped working. Alcohol has stopped doing its job. Alcohol has stopped doing what it is about me that makes me alcoholic. I told you, what makes me alcoholic is that alcohol changes my perception of reality. Because I can't stand reality. And alcohol makes it okay for me to be here with you rotten people doing rotten things in this rotten world that I hate and I can't stand. And alcohol makes it okay. And I hear people in Alcoholics Anonymous meetings say, "I wouldn't swap my worst day sober for my best day drinking." And I think, well, screw you. I had fun, man, for a long time. Alcohol and drugs for me was like great. Drugs, D-R-U-G-S, devil's revenge upon God's subjects. Drugs. And if you're alcoholic, we got to abstain from all drugs as well. So that's another story. But, here I am and I'm in reality and I can't stand reality. And alcohol and drugs have stopped working. Oh, alcohol is still getting me drunk. Alcohol is still putting me in a blackout. Alcohol is still rotting my liver. Alcohol is still getting me in trouble. But what it ain't doing is changing my perception of reality. It's still like working in terms of the physical, but not the mental. And I got a sober mind and a drunk body. And I can't stand it. And I'm in so much pain, I can't stand it. I'm full of hurt and hate. And I hurt and I hate everything. I don't know what you brought to recovery, but that's what I brought. Hurt and hate. I hate women. I can't stand women. I hate homos and queers and anybody different. I hate black people. I'm totally racist and prejudiced. I'm from London, England, living in Los Angeles, and I hate foreigners. I can't stand me, and I hate you, and get away from me, and don't come near me. And with all that torment and turmoil going on inside, I still have to try and present to you a picture of somebody you will like. Because if you don't like me, I'm screwed. And I'm living in this false, phony front, presenting a false, phony exterior, and inside I'm dying. Lonely, desperate, fear, anxiety, guilt, shame, remorse, worry. Anybody relate to any of that? I'm hurting so bad and alcohol isn't making it okay anymore. And I'm screwed. And I hit bottom. And I didn't know about it at the time. And you know what? In the beautiful book Alcoholics Anonymous, in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, there's no mention of hitting bottom. So a lot of people are confused. But I'm not going to leave you confused here today. We're going to take a break now, and I'm going to just quickly recap on what I call the step before the steps. We got to learn to fully concede to my innermost self that I'm alcoholic. This is the first step in recovery. So I want to know what it is about me that makes me what I am. I'm an alcoholic, and I didn't know I was an alcoholic, and I didn't know what being an alcoholic was, and I didn't know what to do about it. I didn't know anything about nothing when I got here. But I do today. I'm Mickey Bush. I'm an alcoholic. I'm in an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. I know what's wrong with me and I know what to do about it. That's a lot of shit right there. I can fully concede to my innermost self that I'm alcoholic. It's a done deal. There's no argument, no debate, no discussion. The voices can't get through to me. And guess what, folks? I ain't had a drink since January the 15th, 1983. And I'm living proof that this thing works. I'm living proof that they let anybody in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm living proof that you ain't the sickest person in the room. And I'm living proof that if you're laughing, you're relating. And if you're relating to a sicko like me, there ain't no doubt about you, pal. I don't get through to no well people. Well people don't laugh at my shit. You people laugh with me. So listen, we're going to take a little break here and then we'll come back after about 10 or 15 minutes and we'll conclude and we'll go on through steps 1, 2 and 3. Namaste. God bless.